Hey, somebody has run out on the field. Some goofball in a hat and a red shirt. Now he takes off the shirt. He's running down the middle by the 50. He's at the 30. He's bare-chested and banging his chest. Now he runs the opposite way. He runs at the 50. He runs at the 40. The guy is drunk, but there he goes. The 20. They're chasing him. They're not going to get him. Waving his arms, bare-chested. Somebody stop
that
man.
Look out. Here comes the blue coat.
Oh,
coming.
They got him.
Here comes
they're coming
the blue
from the left. Oh, and they tackle him at the 40-yard line. Oh, that was the most exciting thing to happen tonight.
And welcome inside the Niners Wire podcast. I'm Kyle Madsen, along with editor-in-chief Chris Biederman, contributor Rob Lauder, and contributor Vince Fasoni. And then coming up later, we're excited to announce we've got our first ever guest. Matt Barrows of the Sacramento Bee is going to be joining us to talk about the game last night, Colin Kaepernick, and much more. This is our second episode. We plan on releasing an episode every Tuesday, but with the 49ers playing last night on Monday, we are releasing this one a little bit later. So hopefully that call by Kevin Harlan isn't the most exciting thing to happen in this podcast, but a 28-0 win for the 49ers was a pretty good way to start the year.
Yeah, and you look at obviously it's a good sign for Chip Kelly in his first game with this team, and it's a good way to start the season. But on the other hand, you look at what happened last year, and the 49ers had that impressive win on the Monday night game against the Vikings. And then if they're actually in the exact same spot as they were last year, playing a team next week in the Panthers that lost that Thursday night opener on the road. And the 49ers played the Steelers last year, who lost to New England in their season opener in that Thursday night game. And then the 49ers got housed by Pittsburgh. And all of a sudden, that win against the Vikings didn't really look so hot. So it's going to be up to the 49ers to obviously play better than they did in week two last year to build any sort of confidence going forward. But overall, I think you look at that win last night, it's hard to take too much away from it given the fact that the Rams' offense was so bad. But I think you have to give the 49ers' defense some credit. I think defensive coordinator Jim O'Neill had a great plan. And they did a lot of things that were entirely unscouted. They went with three safeties a lot. They rotated along the defensive front. They had a lot of different disguise blitzes, a lot of different timing blitzes. Eric Reed was able to get home on a couple plays. So overall, it was a good win for the 49ers and an encouraging start. But now I think they're tasked with backing it up and proving that it's not just a wonky week one win like last year's game against the Vikings was. And they're going to have to prove it's sustainable if they're really going to be a team that can compete and not be at the bottom of the division like a lot of people think they're going to be.
Well, one of the things that I kind of took from it, and this was put out in the 49ers little press release that had all those really interesting stats on it, was that every time they got into the red zone, they scored. And that's completely different than anything we've seen in a very, very long time. And so that's kind of, you know, the Rams defense is the one thing you can take from that you know is not going to change in the way that they were facing a very, very good defense. So, you know, there were definitely plenty of three and outs or, you know, drives that kind of stalled. But the fact that every time they got into the red zone, they scored against a defense like the Rams is pretty promising. And then they turned both of those turnovers into touchdowns too. So, obviously, we know the offense isn't high-powered at all, but at least they were able to make the most of those opportunities against a, you know, probably a top five, top ten defense.
I think that the way Blaine Gabbert played, particularly in the second half of the game, minus some stretches there in the third quarter, was indicative of some good things to come. And just the kind of the resolve he showed even in the beginning of the game when he was not making things happen with his arm. He was taking those keepers that we've all heard about. Nice to see that in action, but you don't necessarily want your quarterback rushing nine times, averaging 4.8 yards or so. But once he found his flow, it was clicking and it looked nice, and he was finding his targets. I kind of expect to see a little more Torrey Smith, but going forward, I think that he had a lot to build on.
We also had another important event, and I think our intro alluded to it, was a fan running onto the field. And Kyle, I just wanted to ask you what it's like to be a viral member of the internet society now.
You know, it feels good. I've just kind of taken a day to absorb it all and take it all in. my Twitter mentions have not stopped exploding. Every time I open the app up, I've got 40 new mentions. A lot of people asking me if they can use my video, and I'm like, yeah, of course. You know, you got to stay humble. You got to remember your roots. And so I'm trying to do that, and that's why I'm still sitting here talking to you guys.
Well, that's big of you for everyone listening. Kyle's video of the fan who ran onto the field, who may or may not have had too many sodas, went on Deadspin and was matched up with that awesome call from Kevin Harlan in the third quarter of that game, where the 49ers didn't have a first down until the last play of the third quarter. And I think at one point, as I was writing, there was five straight possessions combined from both teams without a first down. And I think Harlan, his excitement for something that was outside of that offensive ineptitude was really exciting for him. And I think that call was hilarious. It was probably the best thing to happen on the internet all night. And Kyle, I just really want to congratulate you on inserting yourself into that and becoming a key contributor.
Thank you. Sometimes when opportunity knocks, you have to kick the door down and burst through, and I feel like I did that. So I'm happy I took the opportunity.
So Carlos Hyde, as we all kind of expected going into the season, was the focal point of the offense. He had 23 carries, 88 yards, two touchdowns. It was a lot like last year's opener against the Vikings when he ran for 168 yards. And in that game, he had a career-high 26 carries. His 23 last night was the second most he's had. And I want to get your thoughts on this. There was one play in the second quarter when he went down and it looked like he took a blow to the head and he came out. And it was just before Sean Jerome scored the Niners' second touchdown of the game. And I'm just wondering, you know, what your guys' take is on the idea that can the 49ers rely on Carlos Hyde to be healthy if he's getting 20 carries a game, and what are the other options if they want to lighten the load off of him?
Well, I think they have a good option in Drone. Obviously, Drone's not the running back that Carlos Hyde is, because Carlos Hyde, if he's healthy for all 16 games, is a top three running back in the league. But I think with his running style, he kind of lends himself to those hits, and it's something where you can't rely on a guy getting injured. You can't say like, I'm not intelligent enough to articulate this properly, but it's,
I agree.
It's such a weird thing to say like, yeah, this guy's probably going to get hurt. So what do they do in the meantime? You just kind of have to go with it and hope that he can stay healthy.
Well, yeah. And it seems like every time, and it has so much to do with that style. It seems like every time he got hit, the stadium was quiet for like a second, and then they would applaud the fact that, you know, it was a great player. Whatever happened, it's just, I think he's maybe somewhere around midseason. If he's still healthy after eight games, then maybe we can start getting used to the fact that Carlos Hyde can, you know, maybe have gotten over his injury bug. But until that time, I think, and I think one of us has mentioned this on our site, but until that time, I think every time he takes one of those hits, people are just going to be waiting, you know, and it's going to be a rough grind.
Going along with what Kyle said earlier, his running style really just every single time he's going for those yards after contact, it is terrifying. I mean, there's always someone, you know, a couple like a level behind him, just sprinting down the field to tackle him, often not wrapping up as we saw last night, and that does lend itself to you know, some pretty scary hits.
Well, and if you think about Marshawn Lynch, like Marshawn Lynch. Carlos Hyde runs a lot like him, like very, very similar. And he missed time all the time. I mean, everybody was totally thrilled with him when he was on the field. But it's just that style. I mean, you're getting hit by huge, powerful guys. And there's really just no way the human body can take that without eventually breaking down in some form.
Well, and especially with the focus on concussions and everything, I think Hyde was fine last night, but they had to take him out to take him through concussion protocol because he got hit in the head. His head bounced off the turf, so they had to take him out as per league policy. So I think that we'll probably see that a couple more times, but hopefully he doesn't sustain another concussion like he did in the preseason.
So obviously, I think one of the surprises about last night was the way the defense played. And this is a new defense for Jim O'Neill's scheme that that is going to try to do a lot of different things. And Chip Kelly mentioned it today that he likes the depth and versatility the defensive roster gives him. And he used a lot of three safety looks, like we mentioned. O'Neal developed a bunch of different ways to put pressure on the quarterback. And I think it was a departure from what the 49ers have been in recent seasons. And when Vic Fangio was a coordinator, and the 49ers do some similar man-to-man press schemes that they did under Fangio, but now they're a lot more diverse in terms of how they get after the quarterback, because those 49ers teams had, you know, they had Justin Smith and Ray McDonald and Aldon Smith that you didn't have to get elaborate in your scheme to put pressure on the quarterback. And the big luxury those defenses had was that they could get pressure on the quarterback by just rushing four guys and then dropping the remaining seven into coverage. And that's why you had, you know, that's why the 49ers never lost to Aaron Rodgers was when Vic Fangio was a coordinator, just because those throwing lanes weren't there and they were still able to put heat on Rodgers without having to unbalance the field. And I think with what Jim O'Neill's defense is it's a high risk, high reward defense, because there are going to be opportunities for opposing offenses to really burn the 49ers for leaving the field unbalanced and taking advantage of some blitzes as more and more tape and a bigger sample is out there for teams to evaluate. Because all defenses really have, all offenses had coming into the season was tape using, you know, tape of Jim O'Neill's defense with Cleveland and tape of the 49ers personnel from last year, which was mostly a zone-based scheme. And you have coordinators trying to mix and match their theories on what that defense is going to look like. Well, now there's 60 plays worth of tape to give coordinators an idea of what the 49ers are going to run defensively. And their biggest challenge going forward is going to be mixing it up and making it difficult for offenses based on what they already used. And O'Neal said after the game that, you know, they didn't put it all out there. He said they still have more bullets in the chamber. So I'm curious to hear what you guys thought of the defense last night.
Well, one of the first things I noticed, I was a little timid when I first saw it too, and I know this was mentioned a couple times throughout training camp, was at one point I saw Eli Harold covering Tavon Austin, and luckily during that play the defense got really, really quick pressure and they didn't really hit, the quarterback didn't even get a chance to look that way. So, and I know that, like I was saying, there's been some mentions throughout training camp where outside linebackers like Tank Carradine were 20 or 30 yards down the field just by how the scheme played out on that play. And I think that's one thing that, you know, O'Neal's going to have to adjust to, is because if he's got guys, you know, coming into places like Carolina and Seattle, you can't have guys like Carradine covering receivers down the field. And I think that's just, if I noticed that on one play last night, then, you know, offensive coordinators are going to definitely notice that on film. And I think that might be something they try and take advantage of.
I think it's going to be interesting to see what O'Neal does going forward, because it's clear after last night that they have the talent. I don't think they're going to run into too many offenses that are just that inept in their planning. I mean, I don't know exactly what the Rams were trying to do last night. I mean, obviously the coverage was pretty fantastic. Brock and Ward looked great. You had Bowman and Armstrong with both the picks, and I think Armstrong probably won that job this offseason based on the merits of his pass coverage. But it's going to be interesting how aggressive he is dialing up those blitzes going forward, if he's going to be as willing to do that, because the Rams just were not looking to throw the ball downfield last night. It was kind of, I don't know.
I'm kind of interested to see how things look once Aaron Lynch gets back. He's shown the ability to get to the quarterback off the edge, and if they can do that with just kind of their base guys, it'll be interesting if he sends Lynch, or like we saw last night, has him drop into coverage more. So I'm interested to see that.
Yeah. And what the 49ers have now is a situation where over the next three games, they only have three outside linebackers, but I think it's clear that they're going to mix and match their defensive linemen. And they have eight defensive linemen on the roster right now. They're going to have some of those guys rushing the edges. And you saw some of that last night with Eric Armstead rushing from the edge, and DeForest Buckner is going to do some rushing from the edge as he did from Oregon. And obviously that's a key responsibility of an outside linebacker in this 3-4 defense. So Ronald Blair's another guy. He lined up over the A and B gaps as well as outside. And it gives the 49ers more versatility than they've had in recent seasons. And it's going to be interesting to see because when Chip Kelly announces staff, obviously the most important assistant coach on his staff was going to be that defensive coordinator. And it raised eyebrows for me to see him pick O'Neal after being unable to get Mike Vrabel.
Yes.
After being unable to get Mike Vrabel, who stayed in Houston as a linebackers coach. So obviously the defense is going to be hugely critical going forward because I don't think the 49ers are going to be able to rely on scoring 28 points a game. I think something is going to end up happening with Hyde he's not going to be available for all 16 games. Is Blaine Gabbert going to survive taking some of the hits like he took last night when he ran 9 times? Is Colin Kaepernick going to end up starting? Are the 49ers going to get enough production from their receivers and tight ends? And is Jeremy Curley all of a sudden going to be, one of the things the offense has been missing, which was kind of a mismatch guy out of the slot that Bruce Ellington was going to turn into? So going forward, it's definitely going to be interesting. I think it was easy to go into that game last night feeling pretty comfortable if you're a 49ers fan, with the idea that they're probably going to handle the Rams. And if they were unable to handle the Rams, then it really might be one of those seasons where they win 3 or 4 games. But I think playing the way they did, I think should give 49ers fans some optimism that they might be a team that can be problematic for other teams to play. And, they might be realistically in that 6-7-8 win territory rather than the bottom of the barrel competing for the number one overall pick in the draft next spring.
Well, I'll tell you guys one thing. If they go all year without giving up a point, they're going to win a lot of games.
That's a good take by you.
Thank you. No, but in all honesty, last night felt like watching kind of like a foundation being built versus last year against the Vikings. I left the game feeling like, okay, this is like a house of cards kind of thing. Like they just kind of got everything lined up right, but it's all going to come crashing down eventually. And it did the next week. But this felt a little more permanent. This was something that they can build on going forward. And they may not go out and win 10 games, but it's going to be better than it was last season, which I think is kind of what everybody was expecting heading into this year.
Yeah, and I think you look at the type of game that Eric Armstead had and DeForest Buckner and Rashard Robinson, who was the third corner on the field with Keith Reese or Hurt, and Robinson has already overtaken Dante Johnson, which I think is interesting. Yeah. But Robinson didn't get targeted in the passing game at all. And that's obviously a good sign for the rookie. Not that the Rams have some sort of elite passing attack by any stretch, but normally teams try it when they see a rookie corner on the field, that's where they're going. And I think it speaks to Robinson's athleticism and his fit in O'Neal's man-to-man scheme. He might end up being, if the 49ers keep running this scheme, I thought this early in training camp, that Robinson was eventually going to be their best corner. And they have a really talented secondary, and it's a very highly drafted secondary. And, you look at Jimmy Ward, and Jimmy Ward had a really good game. Eric Reed had a really good game. Antoine Bethea had a really good game. So if whether or not the 49ers, it's a cyclical thing, or it's a complementary thing, right? Like, the pass rush is going to be helped by coverage downfield. The coverage downfield is going to be helped by the pass rush. And last year, they were kind of lacking in both, and they ended up having the third worst defense in the NFL. So I think their creativity on defense, their ability to make quarterbacks uncomfortable is going to help the secondary that's really talented. And the 49ers defense could end up surprising some people.
Well, one of the things that surprised me, and this was more of a Sunday thing rather than last night, was watching Seattle play and just how abysmal their offensive line was. I mean, everybody kind of predicted it. They saw the moves they were making and how terrible they were. But for a while, Miami was having their way with that offensive line. And after seeing what we saw last night, it would be, I think it'll going to Seattle and what would normally be everybody almost dismissing the game as a blowout or as a huge loss might be a bit more interesting than we think it is. And it's all because of that, you know, that a lot of talent up front in that front seven. And it's a pity Aaron Lynch won't be there, but like we saw last night, I think they still have plenty of kind of players in there to get some serious pressure on the old Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I think that O-line was fantastic to watch last night. I mean, you had Tiller, you know, came out for a while and Marcus Barton came in, and I think that even that transition was smooth. And even though we saw how poorly Marcus Martin played last year, you know, they were making holes all night. And even when they weren't making holes, they were still getting enough of a push that it seemed like Hyde or Drone or whoever it was already a few yards downfield before they started to cut back away from the rush or away from the pressure. So it was fantastic to watch. And if that can keep up, and just the pockets were just unhampered, Gabbert had plenty of time to throw. You know, the accuracy wasn't necessarily always there. But if that O-line can keep up that play, then the offense will hopefully be able to hang with the defense going forward.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And one of the things that stands out about Chip Kelly from an offensive guru standpoint is the fact that he finds ways to maximize the talent along his offensive line. And I think the early returns prove that he's done that, and he's found ways to put these guys in good positions, whether it be Trent Brown at right tackle, whether it be Tiller at right guard, and still you have a guy like Joshua Barnett, a first round pick waiting in the wings, who, while it's probably disappointing that he was inactive in his first game after the 49ers traded three picks to take him in the first round, he's going to be a guy that is going to start at some point, whether that's later this season or whether that's next year. It's a good luxury to have a talent like him waiting in the wings when, you know, behind Zane Beatles and behind Tiller. So I think the 49ers' ability to get the most out of their offensive line is definitely one of the biggest differences from a schematic standpoint from last year's offense that just was really terrible all year in trying to put together that offensive line.
And I think when they kind of rebuilt in 2011, 2012, and 2013, it all kind of started in the trenches. And I think we're seeing that now. They're rebuilding that offensive line. They're rebuilding that defensive line, like Rob mentioned. And I think that's good going forward, because that's where football games are won, is down on the offensive and defensive lines. And the 49ers are building dominant forces on both sides.
Yeah, it's just so weird to think about, like, the transition from 2015 to 16, when you think of the offensive line. Like, it was one of the absolute worst in the NFL last year, and it's only been one off season, but all of a sudden it's kind of just seen as one of the strongest elements in the team. And it's, you know, Balky doesn't have a lot of things to hang his hat on nowadays. And I think that's a huge, huge plus, because it wouldn't have ever really mattered who the quarterback was. And maybe it still doesn't, but if that offensive line hadn't improved, and just from 15 to 16 it's still kind of blowing my mind a little bit how quickly that transition from being embarrassing to probably one of the stronger positions on the team.
Yeah, because going into the draft, the 49ers had on the right side of the offensive line question mark at right guard and Eric Pierce at right tackle, and Trent Brown wasn't even really considered an option to start, based on what happened with him during the spring and the off-season program, because he was dealing with it was a respiratory issue or he was sick. I forget exactly what it was, but there was something that prevented him from really playing well and being able to give maximum effort in the off-season program, which led me to think that the 49ers were going to invest heavily early in the draft in the offensive line. But it turns out Trent Brown might be a guy that could ultimately save Trent Baalke's job. I mean, let's face it, it's a seventh-round pick who is starting in his second season and playing at a really high level and could be the team's, you know, next left tackle after Joe Staley retires. And Staley's 32, and there's no indication that that's going to happen anytime soon. But, I mean, you guys follow this team. Staley, next offseason, could decide to retire. Who knows? So you look, and on top of Brown's emergence, you had Anthony Davis actually come back, which was always a question in the offseason. So the 49ers are in an interesting spot offensively because they have the foundation to run Chip Kelly's offense based on that offensive line, and that's really the foundation of having any good offense, where, you know, if you can get the guys up front block, then you can start to execute what you want to execute instead of having the quarterback run for his life every play or having Carlos Hyde facing two guys in the backfield once he gets the ball, which was the case regularly in those first seven games last year.
One of the things I posted this on Twitter not too long ago is I saw an interview with Aaron Rodgers, and it's that HBO show Any Given Wednesday.
Yeah.
And he was asked, you know, if you could have C-minus receivers and an A-minus offensive line, or A-minus receivers and a C-minus offensive line, which would you take? And without hesitation, he said, an A-minus offensive line, because if you can protect, there's no way a defense can cover receivers that long. It doesn't really matter how good they are. If you can protect the quarterback, you're going to find success. And it's, you know, good to see the team, for the most part, has brought itself towards that direction, because they definitely have C-minus receivers would be a compliment at this point.
So real quick, before we get into this interview with Matt Barrows, what's your guys' prediction for how Sunday is going to go in Carolina against Cam Newton and that squad?
I think they're going to hang. I think we're going to hang in that game. I mean, that's the thing this year, is being competitive in games, just less blowouts than last year. Even though the record wasn't as bad as it probably should have been last year, the blowouts are what made it borderline unwatchable for a lot of fans. I think our offense will be getting a little bit more moving. I can still remember a few years ago when we had that 7-6 game against Carolina. And obviously that was just a completely different team. But these are two defensive powers. Cam Newton hasn't improved since then. But I could see it, staying close. I think that would be ideal. If they have a chance to win at the end of the game, that's a win for the 49ers.
Yeah, I think Carolina wins by a couple of scores. I just don't see how the 49ers move the ball against that defense. That's a very good defensive unit. And the Rams were pretty good too, but Gabbert was 22 of 35 for 170 and a touchdown. That's not going to get it done against an offense as high-powered as Carolina's. So I think the defense keeps it close. But I think Carolina pulls away at the end just by virtue of the defense being on the field so often, because the offense will be able to move the ball.
Yeah, I think there's something to the fact that Carolina could be cruising into their home opener, having so much time off, and maybe they overlook the 49ers a little bit based on last season, and they don't take them super seriously because the 49ers are coming in on a short week, and the 49ers just played the Rams, who aren't nearly as good. And the 49ers do, in their back pocket, have that, you know, nobody believes in us factor. And so they're going to come out hungry to prove that they're a better team on the road this year than they were last year under Chip Kelly. I just don't see any way that they can go in there with Blaine Gabbert at quarterback and beat a powerhouse like Carolina in their home opener, with Carolina still expected to be one of those teams. We're talking about competing for the Super Bowl in January. So I think the 49ers are going to play much better than they did, say, last year in week two against Pittsburgh. But I just don't see any way they can come away with that win against a team like that. And as Kyle mentioned, I just don't see them getting enough yards on offense to even put themselves in scoring position. I would lean heavily towards Carolina by at least 10 points probably.
Yeah, that's better. I don't think you're going to see a Pittsburgh, a week two in Pittsburgh type of game.
No.
But I think a couple scores fair, at least 10 points. And the biggest thing that I want to reiterate what Vitt said is, I think bringing in Chip Kelly and all these new pieces, it's going to avoid the blowouts. They're going to be more competitive. They might end up with a similar record, but the games are going to be more competitive, and they're going to put up more of a fight than they did last year. And so that's where I think, if you're trying to be positive, that's where you can take your victories from. Is it might be a loss on the scoreboard, but how did they play the game, so to speak?
Cool. Well, we'll talk about it with Matt Barrows coming up next. So we're back with our first ever guest on the Niners Wire podcast. It is the one, the only, Matt Barrows of the Sacramento Bee. Matt, thank you very much for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. You didn't tell me that I was the first ever guest on the podcast.
I didn't. I thought I did. I thought that was the allure that really drew you to this opportunity.
Well, I would have done it no matter what, but I think that's a mistake. You're setting the bar so high now that every podcast from heretofore is going to fail to meet the initial inaugural podcast.
That's a good point, but at the same time, you have to make a splash. You have to catch people's attention by using star power, and so that's why we went with you to open this thing.
That's true, but if you hit a home run at your first at bat, then anything less than a home run and every bet after that is going to seem like a disappointment.
That's true, but we're gonna stay focused. We're gonna just take it day by day and just try to get better each time. So, with that being said, obviously the 49ers looked very good against a pretty awful Rams team Monday night, and we talked about it before the game that we both agreed that it was probably going to have a similar outcome to last year's Monday night game against the Vikings, just because the 49ers were mostly unscouted and you know, their running schemes that haven't been put on tape before with different personnel. Is there anything that gives you reason to believe Monday night's game against the Rams is an indicator of improvement, or is it just kind of one of those wonky season opening games that isn't really an indicator for what's to come for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more the latter. The week one, you can go back and look at all sorts of weird things that happen in week one, and they're not always a harbinger of things that are going to come the rest of the season. And you're right, it was a lot like last year's Vikings game. And, you know, I don't think it's just the running schemes. I think that three safety look that Jim O'Neill put forth yesterday, it's something that you and I saw quite a bit in practice, but they didn't show that in any of the preseason games. So that was something that the Rams hadn't seen before. And Case Keenum definitely was rattled, and there was little rhythm in that Rams offense. I'm sure a lot of that has to do with the Rams offense, but you know, what the 49ers were throwing at them was brand new too, and so many new faces on that defense. So many different looks that they were giving them. You know, the big test, of course, is that the Carolina Panthers will have this tape, and they have a long time to look at it and to make preparations. The Steelers seem to have no trouble kind of deciphering what the 49ers did last year after the Vikings game. It'll be interesting to see what the Panthers do, and whether the 49ers can you know, keep making changes, keep putting teams on their toes. I will say in the 49ers' defense that they won 28-0, and everything didn't go, you know, exactly like clockwork. I mean, that whole third quarter was a disaster. So there's room for improvement, especially on offense, from the 49ers. And I know it's a bit of a double-edged sword, but I bet that's something that Chip Kelly is excited about. He won 28-0, and he realizes that his offense probably wasn't hitting on, you know, three out of the five cylinders that he thinks it can. So there's room to grow.
All right, so one of the things I noticed being at the game was the amount of personnel switching on defense. You know, with every other play, it seems like there were new people coming in and out at linebacker, D-line, corner. Do you think that depth and versatility on the defense is going to be enough to kind of counterbalance that burden, that infamous burden that Chip Kelly's offense will have on it?
Yeah, that's what the 49ers are betting. That's sort of the overarching theme, and it's a very simplified way of thinking of it, but I do believe that the 49ers feel this way, is that, you know, Chip Kelly's in charge of the offense, and then on defense, you've got a roster that Trent Baalke has been building for the last, what, 6-7 years, and there's some depth there. And, you know, the two things together should make a good team, and the way you keep that defense fresh is to constantly rotate in defensive linemen, and, you know, they had six guys up, and all six guys played, and, you know, Glenn Dorsey's going to be active at some point in the near future. So he's going to be a seventh guy who at least will be available to this team, who can come in and give them quality snaps. So the hope is that over the course of a game, and moreover over the course of a season, that defensive front stays fresh and, you know, continues to put pressure on the quarterback and get off the field. I forget how many three and outs there were yesterday, something like 7 or 8. I mean, that's exactly how the 49ers drew it up. And now whether that's going to continue to be the case week to week Unfortunately, they don't get to play the Rams every week. They do play them twice in the season, but the hope is that depth will have an effect. At the University of Oregon, this is what they did. Chip Kelly and Jerry Azzanaro, the defensive line coach, they had a very deep defensive line, and they rotated those guys throughout the game. Even second stringers would play 30 or so snaps a game. That's how much rotation they were doing. So it's that philosophy that I think the 49ers want to bring to this season.
Matt, one of the weird things, the curveball, the regular 49ers curveball we got before week one was the Anthony Davis thing over the weekend. And you were one of the guys reporting that Davis was considering retirement all of a sudden after things went, apparently, that he was saying, and everyone else was saying, things were going so well with Davis's return. What is your take on the situation, and how is that all playing out, and do you think it's going to have any sort of residual impact going forward?
Well, the residual impact going forward is something that this team should have learned the first time that he abruptly retired, is that you really can't count on him. He's not dependable anymore. He did all the right things, said all the right things, and yet he still went into the weekend and disappeared on Saturday for that practice, and was mulling stepping away from the game. So, I don't know what it is that's causing him to be so hot and cold. But it's there, and the 49ers should have already learned this lesson. But to their credit, he did everything and said everything perfectly after he came back. He lost all the weight. He was dedicated. He was in shape. He was perfectly willing to move from tackle to guard. Everything you want to hear as a coach is what he gave you, and yet at the end of the day, he didn't come through. You were there today yesterday when Chip Kelly said it was a miscommunication, and Chip Kelly sort of fell on the sword and said it was his fault. I think he's obviously trying to make the most of a sort of a confusing and almost embarrassing situation by saying that. The fact of the matter is that I don't know whether from week to week they can count on Anthony Davis to be a starter. He's shown at least twice in the last 15 months that he's a bit shaky when it comes to reliability.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me because you have the 49ers kind of in this transition period. You still have Navarro Bowman and Joe Staley, but it's a roster that's gotten a lot younger, obviously, over the last couple of years, and now it's dealing with an entirely new locker room dynamic with this Colin Kaepernick thing and his anthem protest. And obviously people are weighing in from every angle, and one of the guys, Trent Dilfer on ESPN said he thought the anthem protest was tearing at the fabric of the team, and all the players that we've talked to on the record have disputed that, and Eli Harold was pretty strong in his dispute of that last night, obviously. And it's a situation where I don't think players are gonna say it is tearing at the fabric of the team, or there is conflict on the record, and they might not even tell us anything off the record, because we've had situations like this before, particularly with Jim Harbaugh in 2014, when all the players would say, everything's fine with Jim Harbaugh, when clearly that wasn't the case. But I'm wondering how you read the 49ers locker room now, a few weeks into this Kaepernick thing, and do you think it is kind of a galvanizing force that some of the players say it is, or do you think it's something that might be creating conflict going forward?
Well, I mean, you just look at, you're absolutely right to point out that players have said in the past that there's nothing amiss in the locker room when, and then after the season come out and say the opposite. Yeah, I think the best thing to do is look at where the rubber meets the road. I mean, the 49ers did not seem like a disjointed team yesterday. They did not seem like a divided team. Eli Harold pointed to a scene, a vignette during that finale in San Diego, preseason finale, where Marcus Rush had a interception, and then he was mobbed by half the team. And Harold's point was that this team really likes playing with one another. They like each other and they support each other. And that any notion that there's a divide, a schism, is false. And I think he's right. I mean, no one's seen it. I think anybody who's been saying that there is just sort of speaking from. It's almost like wishful thinking. Like this is what I think would happen from my own perspective, and not really getting in the minds of that locker room. You know, Harold was talking yesterday about what he's seen growing up in Virginia Beach. You know, something like 68% of that locker room is African American. I'm sure a lot of them can relate to the issues that Colin Kaepernick is pointing out or wants to point out. So it just seems to me that everyone who's been criticizing this is coming from a very a different background and is not really kind of understanding exactly who's inside an NFL locker room and what this issue means to those people.
Yeah, now, obviously, at the very, very top of this all, you have Jed York, who, you know, seems to have handled this really, really gracefully in comparison to some of his, you know, past instances. Do you see him siding with Colin Kaepernick in this kind of like a front office cold war, so to speak?
Yeah, I do on this issue. To me, though, the underlying issue isn't the national anthem or Black Lives Matter or Kaepernick versus Gabbert. The issue is money at the end of the day, and you've got this $14.5 million looming for next season. And, you know, if there's a case where it's Christian Ponder who's the backup one game, it's not going to be because of, you know, Trent Dilfer and Donald Trump and Barack Obama and the national anthem. It's going to be because of that $14.5 million. So don't look any further than the money when it comes to something that may upset the apple cart when it comes to Colin Kaepernick and the 49ers front office.
Yeah, well, when it comes to that, I'm interested to see what's going to happen, because to me that's going to be a significant turning point or focal point, I guess, in Chip Kelly's tenure, because if it gets to a point where the front office is telling him, hey, Chip, you know, don't play Colin because we're scared he's going to get hurt because of the money he's due in the spring, and Chip's made it clear that, you know, Kaepernick is one of the two best quarterbacks on the roster, and I don't think anyone would argue Christian Ponder, who missed, you know, the entire offseason program and was an addition midway through training camp, is going to overtake Kaepernick or should overtake Kaepernick. So if the 49ers were to make Kaepernick inactive, it would be strictly a money play like you're talking about. And I wonder how Chip Kelly would handle that and how he would describe that in talking to the media, and whether or not he would fall in line with that, and whether or not that would start to create some of the friction that maybe he had, you know, in a similar situation with the Eagles. So how would you see that playing out, and how important do you think that's going to be going forward?
Well, it's a very interesting dynamic, because you're right. Chip Kelly has almost painted himself into a corner by, you know, making Colin Kaepernick a competitor for the starting role all off season in training camp, and now going into the regular season, saying he's clearly the number two quarterback. So there doesn't seem to be a lot of wiggle room there. Although we just saw Chip Kelly sort of wriggle out of that Anthony Davis episode the other day. So I don't put anything past any NFL head coach as far as kind of talking out of both sides of his mouth. But you know, the point is that you know, Chip Kelly from day one really has wanted to have Colin Kaepernick on this roster. He believes that you need at least two starting caliber quarterbacks to get through a season. And we saw Blaine Gabbert run the ball, what, something like 7-8 times yesterday.
Nine times.
So, I mean, can he run the ball 9 times over 16 games and not expect to get hurt? He almost got hurt on a run in the second quarter where he took a big hit. So, you know, I think it would be very difficult for the 49ers now to kind of extricate Kaepernick from that role unless, you know, he goes out there and isn't very good and they decide to turn the page on him. I mean, that would be the easiest way for them to do it. But that risk is real. I mean, the Gabbert running the ball nine times. Imagine if Colin Kaepernick were in the game, how many times he would have run the ball. A lot of times on those read options, Gabbert was handing the ball to Hyde when he probably should have been taking the ball himself. I think Kaepernick definitely would be taking the ball in those instances, which would create more running opportunities, but also more opportunities for him to get hurt. So that's going to be a very interesting tightrope walk for this franchise. If it ever gets to that point, it'll be interesting to see what they do.
Yeah, and it all kind of leads back to, you know, what's going to happen with Trent Baalke this year? Is the team going to develop enough for Trent to keep his job, or is he on the hot seat? And I think people within the organization might argue that one of the reasons the roster hasn't developed as Trent Baalke would have liked has been the coaching staff, whether it be the end of Jim Harbaugh's tenure. Obviously, Jim Tom Sula didn't develop players like the front office hoped he would. Do you see guys like Vance McDonald and Tank Carradine and a lot of these other draft picks, some of these highly drafted guys, being the referendum on Baalke this year? And is it going to be up to those guys to get developed by Chip Kelly and his staff to, you know, to solidify Baalke's standing beyond this season?
I think the referendum is the 49ers' final record. I mean, I think it's as simple as that. It's a really easy empirical way to judge a GM. I mean, this team has been bad in previous seasons, and they've gotten rid of the coach. The common element throughout all of those firings has been Trent Baalke. You know, I think Tank Carradine's going to be good, and I think all of the guys that Trent Baalke drafted in the secondary are going to be good. DeForest Buckner had a great game yesterday. Eric Armstead had a great game yesterday. All that is good, but those are all guys that play on one side of the ball. And Chris, I know I don't have to explain this to you, but you need both offense and defense to win games. And boy, Trent Baalke has just had a real blind spot as far as offensive players, especially skill position players. I mean, look who was out there at wide receiver for this team yesterday. Two or three of the six guys were just added in the last week and a half. So I mean, and if there are any injuries there, that position's only going to get worse and worse. So I think that's going to be trouble for Trent Baalke. Carlos Hyde continues to take big hits, gang tackled. It's going to be hard for him to make it through 16 games, I think. And then, you know, the bottom line is the quarterback position. He just hasn't drafted a quarterback since 2011 in a high position. And that guy, everybody believes, was drafted by Jim Harbaugh. So you have to be able to, you know, in this day and age, draft skill position players. And I think if Trent Baalke were to be fired at the end of the season, that's going to be what we hear from Jed York and from the 49ers, is that he did a good job in certain portions of this team, accumulated a lot of draft picks, but just couldn't find the right offensive weapons to get this team going.
All right, well, yeah. So Matt, you've been covering the team, you know, for a long time. But I was curious. I'm always curious to talk to beat writers and find out which are their favorite guys that they've covered during their time covering teams. And I would presume that Jim Harbaugh would probably be your favorite coach to cover. But is Jim your favorite coach that you've gotten to know over the years? And who's a favorite player that you've been able to cover covering this team?
Well, my favorite player is Frank Gore. I really enjoyed covering him. There was no guile to Frank Gore. What you saw is what you got. He was just so passionate about football. He only wanted to be a great running back. There was no sort of politics. You asked him a question, he gave you an honest answer. He's a very emotional guy. He was just a pure person. You watch him in Indianapolis, and I was watching him the other day in that white and blue uniform, and he's got number 23 on. He just seems so foreign to me to see Frank Gore in a different uniform after seeing him for so many years. He was just the rock, the one thing you could count on in San Francisco. He probably my first. Alex Smith, I enjoyed covering him. I really liked Anquan Boldin. These are all good, decent people too. So that always helps when you're a reporter.
Well, Matt, really appreciate you taking the time on this Tuesday night. I'm sure you got a lot going on as you get ready for this trip to Carolina this weekend. So thanks a lot, and we will talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Thanks for making me the number one guest on the Chris Biederman podcast.
Yeah, we'll have a plaque sent out coming to your office next week.
My next goal is to get on the 10-year wall after you guys hit your 10th season doing this.
Well, I appreciate the vote of confidence. Thanks a lot.
All right. Talk to you guys later.
And want to give another big thank you to Matt Barrows for coming on and chatting with us. This has been the Niners Wire podcast. Make sure you visit NinersWire.com for all your latest Niners news and notes. Find us on Twitter at the Niners Wire. You can also find us on Facebook. It's also at Niners Wire. Be sure to tune in every Tuesday for the Niners Wire podcast. For Chris, Rob, and Vince, I'm Kyle Madsen. Thanks for listening.